Dr. Shane Ritty is a welcome guest regularly with us. He's our Minister of Health. Thanks for joining us again, Shane. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe, Dale. Good to speak with you.
You too. Thank you, Shane. Look, you formally opened the ARG Te Taitukura Radiology Kaupapa over the weekend with the first provincial digital PET CT scanner in the country. What does it do and why is it important? How important for the people of Te Taitukura, Shane?
This is a really important kit for people with cancer. What it does is it puts a radioisotope alongside a substrate, often glucose. And what we know is that cancer eats glucose quicker than other parts of the body. So if you put this isotope beside cancer, beside glucose, wherever the glucose goes, the isotope goes, and then you can put that up on an X-ray or a CT, and you can see exactly where it's being aggregated. So it's a functional test, if you like, functionally, of where cancer is sitting, and consequently it picks up really small pieces of cancer that you may not yet see with a CT or an MRI. So it's a top-end piece of kit, a PET scanner. But imagine this, this is the seventh one to be open. The other six are in Auckland, Hamilton, Wellington and Christchurch, so the first provincial PET scanner in New Zealand. And there it is in Whangarei. So lifting our cancer game with a high-end piece of kit, and speaking with the company who was deploying it, they have ambitions to put it in other provincial areas. So this is a good news for rural and provincial New Zealand for those people who have cancer.
Tēnā koe, and welcome. You've been pushing for it as well, Shane. Shorter wait times for specialists and for treatment would be welcomed by all New Zealanders. We have had a surge of new migrants calling NZ home. I just spoke with your whānau, Shane Jones, who said that a population the size of Hamilton arrived last year. So we're trying to address Māori health. I know you're committed in that space. How compromising is it that this huge numbers of people are now calling NZ home to advancing Māori health? And how have you factored the growth in population into the way you'll be dealing with Māori health?
So several things there. The people who have come in have often brought skills that we need. For example, they're internationally qualified nurses. And thank you. Thank you for coming, uplifting from your families and giving us a hand when we're short. So to say that, first of all. Secondly, a nurse who helps you in your moment of need, your body doesn't care if it's a domestic nurse or international nurse. In your moment of need, you just need help. But then let's also contextualise that, because I've always been strongly of the view, and I remain of this view, that we want our medical profession to be culturally competent. Absolutely, if you heal people in a culturally competent context, you get a better outcome. So I'm pleased with the support we continue to receive from IQNs, internationally qualified nurses, and IMGs, international medical graduates, and without them we would be challenged. Having said that, we have every ambition to grow our own homegrown, culturally competent doctors and nurses.
Well, of those extra 100,000 people, you'd hope that some of them are medical professionals, but it does put a lot more pressure on an already stretched health system, does it not, just by pure numbers?
Absolutely right. Yep, each of them will have their health needs as well. They'll have their routine screening needs. So, yes, it absolutely does put further stretch on the health system. And these are the discussions that I have as we're working through budgets and those sorts of things. How do we take into account the roughly 128,000 net, as I recall, who have now come into New Zealand, calling New Zealand their home, and their health needs that they will have on the system as well? So that's something that I take into account when we're having discussions around future budgets.
So that Pūtea that was available to service Māori needs now has to be earmarked for the health needs of the 100,000 and more people who are arriving here each year?
It may well do. Of course, that depends on whether there's new money, and that then negates that that argument. But yes, there is certainly that case that what is there may well have to spread more thinly. On the other hand, international migrants have to pass medical, generally have to pass medical tests before they come here. So they would generally be healthy as immigration. New Zealand qualifies them as healthy. And why that's important is because their drain on the health system or their need to access the health system should generally be less than others.
I invite you to give us the upshot, the positives. You know, I'm a media guy, eh, Shane? So I guess we tend to look at the negatives, don't we? But you might be doing some really neat things that we are unaware of. So the stage is yours for a moment. And bear in mind, most of our listeners are Māori, and we're keen to hear how you're working on our behalf, Shane. How did you make your bucks this week? Give us some good stuff.
So, looking at some of the Māori health outcomes defined in Pai 2 and the Whakamāua Action Plan, many of them are health outcomes that will be mine as well. So Pai 2 defines cardiovascular, respiratory, cancer, mental health as being key outcomes for them. That's a key outcome for me as well. And they also absolutely correctly, or the document absolutely correctly, identifies ambulatory sensitive hospital admissions for 0 to 4, what's called ASH. And those are our young people, our infants and children, who turn up in hospital, who could be seen in the community and generally managed in the community. And as I delve further into those numbers, particularly relevant to Māori and Pacifica, but particularly for Māori, it's asthma. It's manageable asthma that is unable to be looked after in the community that then turns up in hospital. So Pai 2 acknowledges that. I do too. That's a high focus for me. The Whakamāua Action Plan adds another one that I didn't see clearly in Pai 2, and that's diabetes. And that will very definitely be a high priority for Māori and Pacifica, but for Māori in my hands. So, you know, many of the outcomes which have been stated, I agree. And I've said this before, often it's not the destination we disagree with, it's the journey that gets us there, that we might have different views how to do that. So we're really focusing on those Māori health outcomes has been quite a piece of work this past week.
Tēnā koe. Mamuku just got COVID. I mean, we're doing reviews at the moment of COVID, but surely more people are contracting it than we may realise. And, I mean, how well do we understand long COVID? Do you think it's premature to do such an in-depth review of our COVID response at the moment when it's still lingering and lurking around communities in our country?
Yeah, so good question. I am seeing the COVID numbers fall below 200 is what I saw a few days ago, where it was up in the 240s, 250s. So it is slowly falling, which is good, but certainly still in the community. The review itself started at least a year ago, and what's happening here is there was a decision by the coalition government to go out to the public and say, look, what do you think should be within the terms of reference? That was part of the coalition agreement. And so that consultation has been completed, and then we'll bring it back and look at how we can look further at COVID. This is a look back primarily so that we can take the learnings to look forward. What did we do? How did we do it? How could that have been better for how we progress forward? Long COVID is a different question. That 10% or more who have COVID, who then have pervasive symptoms, a range of symptoms for 6 weeks to 6 months or even longer afterwards, that's more problematic as to what do you do with it? Is it just a time-limited condition for those who have long COVID? How do we recognise it? How can we be absolutely sure that this is long COVID, not myalgic encephalitis or some other long pervasive conditions that can look very similar? But you know, across the world, everyone's in that same situation. There's no silver bullet for long COVID. I think it is fair to say that, as far as I can tell, those who who need treatment, for example, with some of the antivirals, who receive it earlier, may well have less long COVID than those who don't. But even so, it's an evolving part of medicine that other parts of the world are also trying to get their head around.
Thanks. And just finally, immunisation rates. I know it was a big ticket item for you, and some Pūtea afforded Māori health service deliverers to up the ante. Any feedback here, please, Shane?
Oh, yeah, very pleased with that. In fact, on day one, I had some photographs sent to me of people who were being vaccinated under the program. And this is a combination of several things. It's Māori health providers vaccinating. It's also utilisation of the brand-new immunisation electronic interface called the Aotearoa Immunisation Register, or EIR, and being able to get real-time data on who's being vaccinated and what they're being vaccinated with, and to have Māori health providers on that register, that's already starting to pay dividends. We've got a few interface issues, swapping some data around, getting it from A to B, just sort of tweaks around the system, but very, very pleased with that program. And you're also hearing the Prime Minister, as he describes what we can do with Māori health, give that as an example of backing Māori health providers, utilising what they do well, that ability to reach into remote, rural and vulnerable communities. And, you know, when they get there, they will give an immunisation to a white arm just as quickly as they'll give it to a brown arm. So serving that universal audience when they get there. And you often hear the Prime Minister use this as an example of, here's what we can do.
Thanks, Shane. Looking forward to our next kōrero. Go well. We'll catch up soon. Ngā mihi.
You too. Kia pai tōra.
Thanks. Dr. Shane Reti is our Minister of Health.